My sobriety date is May 14th, 2007. First off, I want to thank Katie. I mean, you did an excellent job, and I wish I could do half as good a job as you do. Let's start it out. What was it like? So I grew up just north of here in Lutz. Good family, two younger siblings. Never really had any challenging experiences as a child. I remember my cousin lost his mother, my aunt, at an early age. And the type of person I would use what his father would do for him is just buy him gifts, trying to console him. But I would use that as ammunition to use against my parents because I was selfish and self-centered at, to the core from the start. And I remember just as an early kid, I would just be like, you know, when I hear my cousin got a dirt bike, oh, where's mine? You know, it's not that, oh, my cousin's dealing with the loss of a mother, you know. It's all about me. And that was kind of the story of my whole life was it's all about Ryan. So I grew up in Lutz. Nothing really different from any other child's, you know, upbringing. For the most part, just went to school, did well in school, had challenges as at an early age that I was diagnosed as having ADD but also being gifted. So the idea was forget the ADD, let's just push them into gifted classes. And so that really, while it did well for some of my self-esteem, it probably didn't work so well for treating the ADD because I was always in trouble. Just because the material was more challenging didn't make me any more focused or any more desire, you know, to really be a good student. I always wanted to be the class clown. You know, I always wanted people to like me and always have fun. And I spent a lot of my time, you know, thinking about how can I be the cool guy or the accepted person. And, you know, that really drove me insane as a kid. You know, that's tough. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people in here can relate to that. But when you're growing up, you feel like you're the only one, you know, and no one else deals with this. So really that kind of carried through. Had a lot of friends, did well in sports, did well in school. Made it through middle school, no major things. Got in a lot of fights. Was a smaller kid and never really measured up against a lot of the bigger kids, but I always thought I was tough, you know, and I'd prove my worth no matter how much blood and pain it caused me. Got through middle school, went to high school. In high school, I don't remember my first drink, but it was probably sometime just before high school at a family reunion or somewhere. Never really got drunk, I think, the first time, but I know the first party I went to in high school, I got blackout drunk. It was fun. It was good stuff. I was the coolest guy in the room. I was the most fun. Everybody loved me. I was having the time of my life. I found that long-lost friend that calmed all my anxiety and all my fears. I remember just doing shots of vodka and then thinking, oh, I'm so cool, this is so gross, but, you know, this is awesome, and I'm chasing it with 7-Up, which wasn't 7-Up, it was vodka. And so at some point in the night in my blackout, my friends took me to McDonald's to get coffee and me, and apparently I'm trying to get refills through the drive-thru, just running around the McDonald's, just making an ass out of myself as usual. And, you know, I never really learned anything from there. I just learned that this is a new way of life for me, and this is great. And so continuing on my freshman year, I think, you know, we were on double sessions, so it was a little bit different program up in at Gaither. And so freshmen didn't come to school till 11 o'clock, so which means we had the whole morning with no supervision. So I don't know if it was me, but I'll take the credit for it, that we decided to start drinking before school and bringing it on the school bus because a core group of my friends, we all had Spanish class together, so, you know, why not go drunk? I mean, that just makes sense. So we were doing that for quite a while, and, I mean, school was great, no worries. I mean, it was wonderful until we got caught. And, of course, I didn't listen to my friends that the school bus driver was watching us. I didn't believe it, so we just kept drinking. And by the time we got off, we were stinking drunk and walking into the deputy's office. So that was a quick 10-day suspension right at freshman year or midterm exam. So flunked all those. So started out the high school career on a good note. Parents sent me to Tampa Catholic after that point because they didn't know what to do with me, so they thought private school was the answer, which it wasn't. Basically, I made friends with all the wrong people again and started stealing my parents' cars and going out at 15 and having fun, and until I totaled my father's car one night while they were out at a party. Apparently, you know, driving with your knee and trying to clean out a car at the same time don't work so well. But I walked away unscratched. You know, I totaled a car, and you know, by the miracle of God, you know, just sitting by beside me, you know, kept me safe, because where I got into an accident, a girl had died like a couple months before in the same kind of car. Just real weird stuff. But it didn't faze me. You know, I paid the penalties, did whatever, and, you know, just moved on and just kept going, and with the lifestyle I wanted, which was, you know, drinking. Drinking was everything. Drinking was the weekends. You know, and I lived for it. So high school continued on. My drinking got worse. I remember, you know, you maybe started off with beers or, you know, actually, I think it was St. Ides was the first drinks we really got at, because they were sweet and wonderful. But you got into beer and, you know, everything else, and vodka or whatever was around. And then I think by my junior, senior year, we were just buying the big bottles of 151. And, I mean, we'd finish them off between two guys over the weekend. And I thought that was cool. I thought drinking the heaviest and strongest stuff and made me a man. And you'd respect me for that, if nothing else. And so, you know, that's the way my drinking was. I mean, it was always blackout drunk, get there as fast as possible. And so, you know, that got me through high school. And I actually, coming from freshman year, being damn near a flunk out, to I actually graduated, you know, over a 4.0. You know, got into a USF with a scholarship, so I had more than enough money to pay for school. And, you know, I thought I was having the time of my life. You know, I'm going to be able to stay in the town with all my friends and go to school for free. And I know all the bars, so this is great. Got the good fake ID. You know, life's good. So made it into college. Freshman year, I was, you know, it was okay. It was the same old high school experience for the most part, carrying over. But my sophomore year, I decided I was going to do a fraternity. And so that seemed like a great idea at the time. And so I joined a fraternity, and I think it was probably a couple months into the fraternity that it was New Year's time frame. Actually, it was New Year's night. And so we were at one party, and we decided, me and my buddy, that we were going to go to this other party because there were supposed to be hotter chicks there. And so we get to the party, and there's a lot of guys, and we're like, oh, screw this. So there's like 10 minutes before the ball's dropping, I'm like, we got to get back to this other party. And so I'm flying. I'm already drunk on who knows what else I had with me. And I thought I was on a road that took you straight to Fowler, and it was a road that took you into someone's backyard and into their house, you know, right, you know, 5 minutes before the ball drops. So now I got my truck parked right in someone's back porch, you know, stuck, not doing so well. Can't get it out because we tried. And so we go back to the party, like, screw it, you know, just leave it there. Just go have fun. And, you know, after like an hour or so at the party, we come back, and the cops are there, and they're like, whose car? And I'm like, oh, that's my truck. And how to get here? I don't know. My dad's on his way to explain for you, because I had called my father, and, you know, he shows up and works his magic and gets me out of, obviously, a DUI, but got like a reckless or something stupid and got dropped later on. But, you know, never learned a lesson. My truck's totaled. And, you know, my parents are like, you're out of control. They're continually giving me these little pamphlets about, you know, are you an alcoholic? Yeah, I'm 20-something, Mom. Get over it. You know, like, this is normal. This is normal behavior. I'm not as bad as, and I would always point to my friends. And that's where I justify things, is always kept really low company with me. You know, like, look how bad he is. I'm doing well. Or I'd always use school, too. School was a good measure that I could really back my parents up. Like, I got straight A's this semester. Leave me alone. You know, like, I'm doing what I need to do. And that's the way I always justified my actions and behaviors, was I always did what I needed to do. I always had a job, whether it was the new one of the week. I always found a new one, and I always maintained employment somehow. And I always did well in school. So continuing through college, it was just the same old, same old. You know, it was drinking every weekend, hard, you know, some nights during the week hard, just always going to blackout, always making an ass out of myself, getting into fights. That's always was fun. And, you know, that just carried through. By my senior year, I was doing other things, but it never shined a light on how much my drinking controlled my life. It was all I thought about. It was all I wanted to do. And so finally, senior year, I managed to graduate somehow from college with a reasonable GPA. And so I had to set out to get a job, you know, because that's important because, you know, let me back up. My senior year, I decided that I wasn't going to work because, you know, that's not what my friends do. And so I took out $20,000 in student loans to support my habits. So I racked up a lot of debt in 2 semesters worth of college, lived very well, and had a lot of fun. And I had a lot of friends because I bought a lot of drinks during that period. And, you know, I never thought twice of it. You know, I thought this is okay. This is what you're supposed to do in college. But going back, now I'm graduating my senior year of college, and I mean, I'm freaking out. My parents aren't finding me any opportunities, and, you know, I'm like, I got to find something. I got to beat all my friends. It was always a competition to be the best. And so I found a job somehow with J.P. Morgan. Now, I didn't know anything about what a professional job entails, and so I go right after graduation, you know, weekend to sign my paperwork over at JP Morgan. And, you know, they were giving me this nice salary, signing bonus, all this stuff. And they're like, by the way, you have to do a drug test. I'm like, excuse me? A drug test? Like, what are you talking about? I have a college degree now. Like, you're not supposed to do this to me. And so, yeah, needless to say, I didn't pass it. And so I was back. Out of money, spent all the money of the student loan money, you know, I'm screwed. And I'm trying to find God now because, you know, that's what my mom wants me to do, to live under her roof. And I'm still going out drinking, but, you know, I'm trying to figure things out. And somehow I land another job, and I'm working for SunTrust now. And so they send me up to Atlanta to live in a corporate apartment and go through a training program. And basically what that means is I have no expenses and a paycheck every week. And that's bigger than I've ever had before. And I'm in a new city where I don't know anyone. So what Ryan does is Ryan keeps a suit and tie in the car and figures out where he's going to end up each night. You know, every night was a new adventure. And I mean, I was doing a lot of things to keep me up during the day because I always had to show up to work. So my life was running pretty unmanageable. I remember one night, you know, one of my buddies gets a DUI in whatever it is, Peachtree Park or whatever it is up there. And then, you know, I'm driving around on 75 with my hood loose because I thought it was the parking brake that was on. And I released my hood and, you know, you're driving and I mean, it's just a mess. I was getting in trouble all the time. I mean, from people and senior management seeing me at, you know, Braves games, hammered drunk, just acting like an ass, running my mouth in class like this. I don't need this. This is a waste of time. Let me go make money for you. You know, that was always my attitude was I'm too good for this. And so then, you know, I got fired pretty quickly. I think I lasted like 2 months. So I'm back. Oh, I got to find God. Oh, I got to get sober. Oh, I got to get this. And so I think I sobered up for a little bit and started the church thing again. And, you know, and then I found another job. Then, okay, all that stuff can go to the backseat. And so my next job gets me to, sends me to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, because it's another bank. And so I have to go to Wisconsin. And I think when they told me where I had to go, I asked, where is that? I know where Wisconsin is, but where's Milwaukee? Like, I've never heard of this place. This is new to me. And then I realized it was close to Chicago. I'm like, all right, great. I can party in Chicago every weekend. And like, I'll still have a life. But Milwaukee was a really fun town, and there was a lot of young people in the program, so, you know, it was a lot of drinking and a lot of partying. But I was definitely over the top. You know, I was always the one who was the extreme of everything. But the thing I remember most up there, and I mean, I had some real tough periods. Like, they have a 10-day period of music festival, and so it's every night you go see new bands. And I mean, I was drinking every night. I mean, it was to the point where, I mean, I would get to the music place, and I was just getting sick by the smell of it, but I didn't care. You know, my body's, like, detoxing and not wanting it, but that's all I had to do was to get past that feeling. And I remember I had cold sweats. I was detoxing some nights, and, you know, it was bad. And all I remember is this loneliness. You know, I just felt so lonely up there. And I'd always call my friends in the morning, trying to make them feel, like, envious of me. Like, oh, I had this wild night. And, oh, I met this chick or did this, that, and the other. But, you know, it was always this emptiness inside me that, you know, I was realizing this drinking thing wasn't working much for me anymore. But somehow I managed to keep that job. And so then they sent me back to Tampa. And I get back to Tampa. And it couldn't have been a couple months into, you know, me being back in Tampa. This is my second DUI. I skipped the first one because, you know, that's just a rite of passage. But the second one, was, you know, it wasn't earned in my eyes, because I should have earned a lot of DUIs. You know, I was a freaking missile driving around on the roads. I mean, Wisconsin, Atlanta, I've never driven on these roads in a blackout drunk. I'm managing to show up home. How I never killed anyone was by the grace of God, because I thought my ego told me every time I could drive, you know, I'm fine, leave me alone. And so the second one, you know, I was just pulling out of a little shitty bar and clipped a curb and they took me in. And that day was actually the day before Mother's Day. And I had been out to church with my mom. You know, I did that. Okay, I'll go to church. And can we do dinner afterwards? Can we go get drinks? You know, it's like I always, you know, made it a requirement for a visitation of my parents was, we're going out to dinner. We're going to get some drinks, right? And it's on you. And so that day was not like nothing else. You know, I had a couple of drinks with my parents and then went to a bar. None of my friends were there yet, so I started chugging a pitcher because I bought a pitcher for everyone, but no one was there, so it was for me. And then, you know, a couple others later, you know, I'm three sheets to the wind. And so I get this DUI, and so this is, what, my second or third time being arrested. And it's Mother's Day, so basically it's Sunday morning when I'm calling my mother to ask her to bail me out of jail for who knows how many time, you know, for the same old story. And I remember, you know, that's probably the worst experience when you get a DUI is just sitting there waiting that 8 hours before they release you. It's just hell. You, there's nowhere comfortable. It smells. You want to be in bed. And, you know, right when my mom walked up, you know, just that look of disappointment in her eyes, the look I've seen a million times and the sorries that I've said a million times and the million I won't do this agains all came rushing up. And it's just like, you know, what am I doing to myself? I'm killing the people I love. You know, I'm just breaking their heart every time I do this. And so, you know, I got home Sunday and I'm like kind of getting cleared up, figuring out what the hell. I mean, I'm thinking I'm going to lose everything. This great job, which I hated, but it was a great job. And, you know, I'm going to lose where I live. I'm going to lose, you know, my family. I'm going to lose all these things, these material things that I thought mattered. And so Monday, I decide, you know, my parents had given me enough stuff about AA. You know, the one thing I didn't talk about was my mother's side are straight up alcoholics. You know, Irish Catholic, you know, just drunks to the end. My grandfather died an alcoholic. My uncle's dying as we speak, an alcoholic death. So they've known about AA and they would push it in front of me, but I finally took it upon myself that I was going to go to a meeting. And the first meeting I ever went to was a men's meeting, and it wasn't the big one; it was a small one at St. John's. It was and Josh is here, and you know, I walked in there broken, just a broken shell of a person, and. I told them why I was there. I had no idea. I remember sitting there, and they told me, you know, I kind of figured out that everyone had to share. And I'm like, what the hell did I get myself into? You know, I don't want to talk. I just came here because I don't know what to do. And, you know, so I shared, you know, what was going on and why I was there. And, you know, and for a while, I really didn't believe I was, you know, I always knew I was an alcoholic, you know, I was okay with that, you know, because I thought alcoholics could still be successful and make money, and that's all that mattered. You know, it doesn't matter all the collateral damage you do in between there, as long as you make money and are rich and famous and whatever. But so I'm there, and I'm, you know, just trying to figure this all out, and a lot of me was there for, okay, God, I'm going to get sober, and you get me out of this second DUI, because I can't have this. And, you know, I stuck around. I didn't listen to what they said. And my life was hell for the first 90 days. You know, I only went to that meeting, you know, and I was still going out thinking I had to have my life of going out to bars, but not drinking in your first 90 days and, you know, off a second DUI. You know, you are screaming. Everything inside of me is screaming, have a drink, just have a drink, just have a drink. I mean, it was insane. I don't know how I survived. I white-knuckled the hell out of it, and I did it a lot out of the spite because the men's group that I was going to were telling me, you're not going to stay sober, just go drink. You know, you have no chance. If you don't want to listen to what we have to say, you're screwed. And so a lot of me did it out of spite for those old men and a couple of the younger ones. Just to stay sober, to prove them wrong that I could do it. And then finally, I pulled my head out of somewhere else and started listening. And I worked with a sponsor, and I started going, did the 90 meetings, my second 90, you know, 90 and 90. And, you know, I started with a sponsor that, you know, don't pick a sponsor the way I picked a sponsor. I picked a sponsor based on he looks successful, he sounds like he's got himself together, and he drives a nice car. He must know what he's doing. My sponsor quit after like 2 months in, you know, that he's like, I'm not going to AA anymore. And I'm like, okay, glad I did this whole four-step, fifth-step thing with you. Like, feel real comfortable, you know. I'm glad I aired that out. So, you know, I was back and I was pushed off, and this is probably still within my first year of sobriety. And so I found another sponsor, but I looked harder for them this time. I listened to what people had to share in meetings. I listened to what the, you know, people that really lived what I thought was a good life, you know, was working the program. And so I found the same sponsor I have today. And we went through the steps, and I was pretty steadfast because, you know, I had nothing to do because I had my second DUI and I had no car. So, yeah, I'll work this program on the weekends. I got nothing better to do. You know, I don't know how to date. I don't know how to go out and have fun. So, okay, we'll do this. And so I worked the steps with him. And, you know, not always, you know, diligently, but as good as I could. You know, that's the best. That's all anyone will ask for you in here is just do what you can as best you can, and just don't take a drink. You know, that's the one thing I heard loud and clear is don't take a drink and just keep coming back. And so I kept doing that for a while. You know, the half measures is kind of my program for a long time. You know, the one measure I did take seriously was don't take a drink, because I could play that tape. Ryan with a drink, okay, one, yeah, it might not anything happen, but the 20 later, Ryan's going to be in a car and, you know, a missile down the road trying to kill someone. And I've heard enough stories in here, people in here that have killed people, and it's, you know, that's the rest of your life you're going to live with that. And I didn't want that weight on my shoulders. So, you know, I kept doing stuff. I picked up service positions. And, you know, life got good. And then I decided, you know, I can run the show a little bit more. And, you know, went to a wedding one time. And it was in Savannah. And I was there because I wanted to go hang out with this chick. And it was misery. I remember being in Savannah and just being like, what the hell did I get myself into? I mean, these people are drinking nonstop. And I'm thinking, I'm like a year into sobriety. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, I want to stay sober. Every ounce of me wants to stay sober. But it's just, I feel so uncomfortable and so out of place here. And what was funny is one morning, it was like the second morning we were there, I went and I found a meeting. And I went to this meeting and I met this old guy. And it was a weird meeting in Savannah. Like, if you ever go, check it out. Because, I mean, the bridge and tunnel crowd, and I'm not talking about the people that live on the other side of the bridge and tunnel crowd. I'm talking about the people who live under the bridge and tunnel crowd were there. And it was a wild meeting, but this guy put out his hand, you know, never met me another day in his life, but he helped me out, and he got me to a meeting the next day to help me get through it, because it was insane. I remember being at the wedding itself and just picking up what I thought was my water glass and looking at it. I'm like, yeah, that's champagne. No, thank you. You know, but it was just so close and so uncomfortable. And, you know, I made these decisions and these actions based on what my good thinking is Ryan, you're okay, you got this. And, you know, that was just proof I did. But it was proof that AA is always there to lend that helping hand. So then continuing on through my second year, you know, everything was up, down, and indifferent. Got into a relationship that might not have been the most advisable, but, you know, I did it. And, you know, we had our ups and downs, and it's been interesting learning more about myself through, you know, every relationship. I'm learning a little bit more about myself, a little bit more things I need to work on, because all I want is joyous, to be joyous and free. You know, that's to not have the chatter in my head, to not have, you know, the emptiness inside, to be full of family and friends, to be full of the spirit that's something bigger than I would ever understand. So really my second year was, you know, it's kind of a blur now thinking of it. I got my driver's license back, you know, that was huge. That was a big improvement than riding the bus every day into downtown in a suit and tie, you know, with, again, some interesting characters. And, you know, and then I got the breathalyzer. That was fun, you know, being able to drive and do the breathalyzer in my car every day. That was really humbling moments. But, you know, I got through those experiences, and I stayed sober through them. I lost my grandfather in my second year, and he was pretty close because he bailed me out plenty. After my first DUI, I had lived with him for a while, and I was still just a raging alcoholic, and definitely took advantage of all the generosity he offered me. But what was a pretty cool thing was, because he was kind of on his deathbed for a while, I actually had a chance to sit down and talk to him and kind of try to make that amends for whatever I understood of it. And, you know, I started telling him, like, Grandpa, I'm really sorry. You know, I know my behaviors wasn't always what you would want of me, but I'm really trying to be a better person today. And he's like, that's all I care about. You know, like, he didn't want money. He didn't want, he didn't even want the apology. He just wanted to know I was doing better than I was. And, you know, that was, like, that was pretty eye-opening. That was, like, one of those, I get why we do what we do. Another one was an early on, actually, let me back up to my first year. I thought right when I got sober, I'd make some financial amends to my parents that I owed them some money. And the idea was I was going to offer it, and they were going to reject it, and I was going to go buy a boat. Because that was the whole game plan. Like, that's the way it was supposed to play out. So I sat down with my mom, like, Mom, I really want to pay you guys back for the money you lent me on my truck that I never paid you for. And she's like, okay, you can go ahead and transfer that. And I'm like, are you shitting me, really? Like, you sure you're not going to, you know, let me have it as a present for being so good and getting sober? She's like, no. And I'm like, okay, so, you know, don't think you know what's going to play out, and don't have expectations that are really not of the true nature of making amends in mind, because they'll bite you in the ass pretty hard. And so, you know, my second year was good. You know, I made it through my grandfather's thing. And the other thing that with his death was I was there for my dad. And my dad and my relationship has always been one of, like, every father's son, of trying to prove myself as, you know, an equal, or, you know, as a man in his eyes. And, you know, at that place, it was a really humbling experience to have seen all the things my father had done for my grandfather and my grandmother with her passing, but then to be there for him and try to be supportive. Like, that role isn't a role I sit in when I'm drinking and using. Like, that role I could care less. Like, deal with your own shit, you know. I'm not here for you, but if I need help, you better be there for me. You know, it's a me-only mentality. And so, you know, that was another great experience that I've only had because of being sober. This third year, you know, just jumping into this year itself, it's been full. I started back in school. I started studying for the LSAT. I started doing all these things because I wanted to do different things in my life, and I wanted to have some more experiences. One of the sad things was is I lost my dog. And this is a dog I got, you know, my senior year of college, and he was with me through everything. I took him everywhere we went. He'd be sitting at the bar right next to me, and I'd be feeding him drinks. Like, that dog was cool. And, you know, I remember it happened so fast that it was like within 2 days I had to make the decision to put him down. And it was like the dog was fine 1 week, and then next week I got to make the decision to end his life because, you know, it was basically really bad cancer and a tumor and all this stuff in his intestines. So he was just done, and he was in pain. And I remember being in the shower and just being at just that idea of powerlessness and unmanageability had me on my knees. And I was like, God, you better give me the answer because I just can't figure this one out. I mean, that was just, I can understand what parents deal with a relationship with a child, but, you know, a pet to me was as close as I've ever had to that. And, you know, I got through that, and, you know, I didn't want to drink. You know, that's just boggles my mind that, you know, I would drink on anything, you know, good, bad, indifferent. And now it doesn't even come across my mind. And it was amazing how much support I had from all the friends and family in my life. And then kind of coming up till today, you know. Today I work my program not perfectly, you know. I'm far from it. I know I have a lot to work on. I know I have a lot of service to give back to AA for all the things it's done for me. So I'm glad I said yes to this because, you know, Ryan a couple weeks ago or a couple years ago has said, yeah, no, that's not for me. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to have been of service tonight to whoever got something out of this. And if you do hear anything in my message that contradicts what your sponsor says, do not listen to me. Do not take my story as what you should do, because it's far from that. But the experiences I've had in AA have changed my life, and, you know, I can only hope that tomorrow I can do the same thing and just stay sober and, you know, hopefully be of subservice to someone else. So thank you for letting me share.